40th anniversary of the Clean Water Act. Our topic next here, Denny Kenneff, executive director of the River Alliance of Wisconsin. Denny's been an avid paddler and, wow, since childhood, and he once canoed the entire length of the Mississippi River. That must have been cool. Master's degree.
It was really hot, actually.
Well, he is with us today to talk about the Clean Water Act, but of course, because the River Alliance played a pivotal role in the passage of that act, and so we're going to talk about what that act has meant to you and to me. What are the biggest concerns right now of our waters? What do we see on the horizon that we should be aware of? How do you enjoy those waters? What are your biggest concerns? I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, and you can post a question or a comment there. And Denny, again, good to have you back. Thanks.
Good to be back.
Yeah. Great to have you here. What prompted the passage of the Clean Water Act? Who were the big champions, Stu?
I'm not sure of the individual champions. It happened during the second Nixon administration, of course. Yeah. But I know you've been talking endangered species a lot of this year, given that 40th anniversary. And you think of Rachel Carson and her book Silent Spring and the disappearance almost of bald eagles as the alarm that led, mm-hmm. I think, to the Endangered Species Act. I think if water in rivers in particular had a bald eagle, it was the Cuyahoga River. Everyone remembers that as the river that started on fire. This is the river in northern Ohio.
Yeah.
And I have learned since that it was not uncommon for the Cuyahoga to start on fire. It wasn't just once.
Man.
And it also wasn't the only river that burned. There were others. And, you know, that kind of damage to rivers was accumulated damage from 100 years or so of industrialization in the country and in the world, for that matter. And I think people had enough. I think the outcry was too much. People couldn't use rivers. Fish were dying. I can remember, I grew up on the Mississippi at Hastings, Minnesota, mm-hmm. south of St. Paul, and grew up in the country, so I had my annual summer trip to my cousin who lived in town. So the city mouse entertained the country mouse, and we would go fishing and swimming in the river. Never mind the warnings we got from mother and aunt not to do so. And we did anyway. And I remember coming home once, this would be late 60s, and my mother saying, "You smell like Scotch tape." And the reason I smelled like Scotch tape was because 3M Company had a plant upstream from Hastings, still does. And I mean, they discharged whatever compounds they were using. Went straight in. And farther upstream, of course, we were too stupid to know this at age 12, but there were, I think about it now, there were a couple of packing plants at South St. Paul. Mm. They just shoveled their, you know, offal into the river. There was a, we called them dumps, right, in the day, now called landfills, but they were literally dumps where they burned stuff. And, of course, that's how we treated rivers. Rivers were where we dumped stuff. And, of course, that was going to have cumulative damage. And finally, the country said enough, and the Clean Water Act was quite complicated, sweeping legislation, really. And I don't know if we should get into all the nitty-gritty details of it, but I think looking back 40 years, I think your listeners will be able to attest. You know, we can use rivers in ways, and lakes for that matter, but really the rivers were places where we dumped stuff because it got sent downstream, really are the beneficiaries of the Clean Water Act. All water, all surface water is in the country. You know, fish are coming back. People can swim and fish. They can boat in rivers like they would not have dared would have come out smelling like Scotch tape.
And what the major provisions, without going into all the minutiae of it, but what were the broad implications of that act? What did it do?
Well, if you were going to discharge to a river, if you had a pipe and you were putting stuff out into a river, you needed to get a permit from the local Natural Resources Agency, the federal government, this is a federal law, of course, mm-hmm. but the federal government, the Environmental Protection Agency, delegates the authority to act on that law to states. So Wisconsin is a so-called delegated state. So it carries out the Clean Water Act. The EPA, Environmental Protection Agency, sort of watches and oversees all this. But in terms of the day-to-day, week-to-week, month-to-month, year-to-year work, it's the DNR. And that's the case in most states in the country. So if you're a polluter, you get a permit, you got to play by the rules. You got to reduce whatever you're putting in. You maybe in some case you have to eliminate it if it's a carcinogen.
Mm-hmm.
So any use of water in terms of discharge or taking water out of a river or a lake, you need a permit. That set the stage for managing what ended up in rivers. And I think the second big deal about the Clean Water Act that groups like mine and the citizens we work with around the state take advantage of are the so-called citizen provisions of the Clean Water Act. There are quite a few. For example, if you're a polluter and you have a pipe and you discharge and you have a permit, there's a comment period that the public can say, you know, we think this permit's fine or we think this permit's way too weak. You should do something about it, DNR. That's one big deal. There are provisions for so-called citizen lawsuits. If you think mm-hmm. that the local natural resources agency has really failed in doing its job, well, you can actually sue the EPA to have them tell the state government
to do
its job. Every 2 years, the DNR comes up with a list called the Impaired Waters List, which is a way of saying these rivers or lakes are polluted or impaired in one way or another. And citizens can tell the DNR that they think their stream or river or lake should be put on that list. And if it's on the list, then it's kind of on the list to be more carefully monitored, to be managed. If you have a pretty big river like the Wisconsin River, there can be a sort of a big water quality monitoring study that the DNR can conduct called the TMDL. We won't get into the details of that, but what it is yeah. is they zoom in on a river, monitor the pollution going in, and decide what are the bigger sources, and then ask mm-hmm. those sources to kind of turn it down, basically. And all along that process, there's a lot of public comment. So that's a big deal, too, that law, I think, was quite far-sighted in allowing the public to have some say in how water is managed.
And has it made an impact?
I can't imagine, Larry, what rivers would look like in this state without it.
Yeah.
I think of two. We just mentioned the Wisconsin. You know, I can't wait to hear from people our age or mm-hmm. older who will remember that there are probably parts of the Wisconsin River you could walk across in the 60s, that the river smelled from a half mile away.
Yeah.
The other one that's made a remarkable turnaround, and they're still struggling, of course, is to get the PCBs out. Because they're in the sediments of the river, is the Fox. We're having Riverlines is doing an event on July 13th. We're calling Taking Stock of the New Fox. And it's really to kind of honor the really good work that's going on now as a result of the fact that the river is it's a much better place. It's healthier. I remember going up it was last fall, last summer, looking around and stopping in Appleton and seeing the pelicans sitting below a dam, you know, waiting mm-hmm. for an easy lunch. I'm guessing it's been a long time since, you know, pelicans survived eating fish in the Fox River. And the communities there are starting to turn back to the river. I mean, they use them, obviously, for industrial purposes. Some of those industrial purposes are sort of going away, and they're remaking the waterfronts and stuff. And I think it's those two rivers really are exemplars of the benefits of the Clean Water Act, I'd say.
Dennis in Friendship has a question for you, Denny. Let's go there. Hi, Dennis. Thank you for calling.
Hi. What can we do about these big factory farms that are coming in and the pollutants or the effluent that they're putting out based on that? We have a factory farm of about 4,500 head of Holsteins and whatever up at the headwaters of Friendship Creek and Friendship's Lake, and they're going to put in another 5,000 head. What does the Clean Water Act do for us with regard to that?
something. There's a lot of stuff that those big industrial livestock operations bring to natural resources. A livestock farm, let's take a dairy farm because people get those the best, and that's the most common sort of so-called industrial size farms we have. There's a limit where if you pass a certain number, then you have to get a pollution discharge permit from the DNR, and that's roughly about 700 milk cows, so so-called 1,000 animal units and up. So the farm you described there in Adams County, yes, would require a pollution discharge permit. And it's really up to the Natural Resources, Department of Natural Resources, to make sure that farm has a manure distribution plan and the barnyard contains the waste and so forth. These are really big, complex operations. I would say that up until a few years ago, when the typical big farm, I mean, the average farm is well under 1,000 cows still in Wisconsin. But I think when they went big scale in Wisconsin, they were more like 1,000 or 1,200, 1,500 cows. And I think we had decent regulatory systems to manage those. I'm not sure that when we're getting into 5, 7, 10,000 cows on one site, that the current regulatory system is good enough to know what the long-term effects of that much manure spread around is going
to
do.
Yeah, so it's a question yet to be answered. But they've got to big farms like that have to prove that they can manage that like any other business. It's just a question of, we haven't had the experience yet to see if it, in fact, that can be done.
Yeah, I guess, and for, I don't know if Dennis, who called, is a nearby neighbor, but I think this is kind of testing this on the fly in many ways, Larry.
Yeah. Denny Kenneff, Executive Director of the River Alliance of Wisconsin, our guest till 12:30 today here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Wisconsin waters are key to our recreation, our agriculture industry, and to our health, and our quality of life for that matter. And in 1972, the Clean Water Act was passed to protect those resources nationwide. 40 years later, what's the impact? Hi, Larry Mueller here. Glad you could join us today on the Ideas Network. The Clean Water Act had far-reaching effects on our environment, and we're talking about it today with Denny Kenneff, about how it came to be, the changes it produced, and where we are today. And we want to hear from you who enjoy, I hope, Wisconsin's lakes, rivers, and streams. And Denny's happy to answer your questions when you call in. The number is 1-800-642-1234. You can post a comment, a photo on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Click like on the page while you're there. We'll send you regular updates on upcoming show topics. And we'll be back with Denny Kenneff right after this look at the news. Stay with us. Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Seems like there was an awful lot going on in 1972, and it had long-lasting impacts on our environment. We just talked about the Endangered Species Act that was passed that year. Now we're turning our attention to another critical piece of legislation, the Clean Water Act, with Denny Kenneff, Executive Director of the River Alliance of Wisconsin. And great to have him along, and thank you so much for listening in. I hope you'll join in with your own questions or comments as we move along today and talk about that act and its impact. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. Or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, and you can post a question or a comment there. We had a Facebook comment from Alan, who says, we live a short walk from the Fox River. We often talk about what a wonderful change we've seen in this river since we moved here in the mid-70s. So they've been watching it. What a thrill to see the eagles and the pelicans and their brethren thriving on the river.
And I think the human activity around the river, as I mentioned earlier, Larry, there's a group's effort worth mentioning here because, in fact, today an initiative they're pushing is getting a hearing in the Senate, U.S. Senate, and that's the Fox Wisconsin Heritage Parkway. You know, Green Bay to Prairie du Chien, before those towns even existed, the waterways obviously existed, it's been a busy highway
yeah.
for centuries. And, of course, there's a lot of history, and that organization is starting to piece together that history of how those rivers really helped bring along the development of Wisconsin, and they're pushing for kind of a national designation for that. There's also a similar effort working with the Rock River, kind of a two-state thing with Wisconsin and some people in Illinois. Same thing, and beyond just the water quality and the benefits to fish and wildlife, which are great, but then there are these cultural, historic, aesthetic
yeah.
attributes of rivers that people are rediscovering now, which is a great thing.
Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned history, and it just reminded me, there's a great new kind of a trivia game, Trivial Pursuit type game, about our Wisconsin lakes, not the rivers, but I think a lot of the questions in this are relating to the rivers as well as the lakes. And it's done by the UW Extension and the Department of Natural Resources. And trivia questions about the history, fish, the wildlife, the sports and recreation of our Wisconsin lakes. And we posted a link on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. You might want to go to, you know, there's a link to the River Alliance, so I hope you'll take a look at that link, and then I hope you'll also take a look at this Wisconsin Lakes trivia. It's a fun game, and it's something you can have at your lake home or at home. We're going to be using it to play so that my daughter actually will learn a little bit more about our waterways here in Wisconsin and have a lot of fun doing it at the same time.
I saw it sitting here, and I thought, oh, you're going to play Stump the Expert with that. Or prove that the expert isn't.
No, I would hate to do it. I'd hate to have somebody try that on me, so I would never do anything like that that I wouldn't want tried on me at some point or another. So the link for the game is on our Facebook, so as a comment to the status. So go there and take a look. Joe in Stevens Point, I thank you for calling. Hello.
Hi there. How's everything going today?
Just wonderful. Thank you.
You're great. Just wanted to say, you know, as an avid fisherman and as a boater and a swimmer, we live right by the Wisconsin River, and I can easily say that without the Clean Water Act, I don't think I would want to do any of those things in that river. It's just a really wonderful area. I just kind of wanted to follow up on the previous caller's comments about these large farms and things. You know, drive around the area, and there's a lot of cattle headed around. And I've been doing research regarding manure digesters and things like that, and the ability of, you know, they can do lots of things and get rid of the waste and allow bacteria to even create methane for natural gas and electricity. I was just wondering if there was any state, local, or even national initiatives to kind of proliferate that sort of technology to some of these larger farms, or even centralize them in an area where there can be a lot of that waste, which can get right back into the water system. And I'll take my answer out there.
All right, thanks for calling.
I don't know if there's any national effort to that effect. There are a number of big dairy farms in Wisconsin that have digesters. It's a whole other enterprise. I mean, those yeah. dairy farms are really complicated enterprises anyway, and then you take an energy generation piece and bring that in. I don't know if they're the panacea for water quality issues from manure either. There's, you know, people are really nervous, understandably so, about big dairy farms. There's still a lot of small farms that are kind of messy.
Mm-hmm.
In this state, we were supposed to have cows out of streams, mm-hmm. quite a few years ago, and you can still find them in places around the state. So, I think the big farms pose a huge challenge. I do, but there are small farms are not totally innocent.
Melissa in Oconto, hello to you.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Kind of going to the small farms was a good segue because I live on a river in O'Connell, and was wondering about your thoughts about people that are moving in and building on the shores, and then they have to fertilize their lawns and cut right up to the water and, you know, add sand beaches and all these other things. And I know my sister's a biologist, and she studied the impact on turtles, and I'm thinking if it impacts turtles, it must be impacting a lot of other things. And I was wondering like I said, your thoughts on that.
Sure. Well, we frame this all as a Clean Water Act conversation. And as far as the Clean Water Act goes, shoreland development, shoreland zoning has nothing to do with the Clean Water Act, or really vice versa, I should say. So these are zoning issues, local, sometimes the town, often the county zoning issues, or if you're inside of a city or a village, well, it would be their zoning business. We're seeing a lot more pressure on rivers of that kind of development because the lakes are getting used up. Mm-hmm. It was running out of lots on lakes. So rivers haven't been as fun for people to have a place on because they're harder to water ski on, and, you know, they're more dangerous often in some ways than lakes. But, you know, people like being on water. Yeah, it's hard to see the suburban mentality transferred to water bodies in northern Wisconsin or to rivers. I'm not sure. There's no biological advantage to mowing to the edge, and you have to ask people, take a break from mowing. You know, that buffer between the shore and off the shore quite a ways is really beneficial for water quality. So it's in landowners' direct self-interest to protect the water with a buffer from their shoreland place.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Melissa, for calling. Appreciate it. Nancy in Grafton, turn to you next. Hi, Nancy.
Well, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
We have the Milwaukee River flowing through our village, and there's a dam there. And there are people who own property on the river who think this dam has to stay there regardless of how much money it costs to fix it, how much algae is up north of the stream. You can look up to the north of the river, and it's just green with algae. Now, how in the world? It provides no hydroelectric power like it did many, many years ago. Why in the world are we... Why can't we have that dam out and let that river run free?
Are you talking about the dam in Grafton?
Correct.
Nancy? Okay. And didn't the village just have a referendum where voted in favor of keeping the dam?
They did that. But, you know, the big thing is the people who own property along that river are the ones who really want that dam to stay there because they think that makes their property more valuable because the river is a little higher. But I don't think people realize how much money it costs to keep fixing that dam so that it's safe. And then they're all putting ladders in for the fish to come up, and on it goes. It's pathetic. And many other dams are going out. Newburgh took theirs out and a lot of other places up the stream. But no, we have to keep ours and keep spending money to keep fixing it. It would be better if it going. You know, it would take maybe a year or two, but by golly, it would really look nice when the water would ripple down over the stones and it would run free, and there wouldn't be all that green algae there.
So, and she's right, Nancy is right, that a number of communities have done that.
Yes. Dams are a big story here in this state. We got our start as an organization asking the question, do we really need these small, uneconomical dams? They're almost always controversial, dam removals. The thing that provokes their removal often is the fact the thing needs repair. And as the caller pointed out, it's expensive. And if the municipality owns it, they think this is not worth keeping. I had wished when the voters of Grafton voted to keep the dam that maybe some folks had done a bus tour up to West Bend, the city of West Bend, where I believe two dams were removed not all that long ago. And the city of West, it's beautiful what they have done since. There's a lot of myths about what a dam is. Some people think it's the source of the river. And Nancy describes the water quality eventually behind a dam. It fills up with sediment. It's shallow, starts getting carp infested, starts getting weedy. And, you know, it's really bad for the health of the river generally. And people really attach to those. I remember someone telling a story once where there was a hearing about a dam removal somewhere in the state a few years ago, and someone talked about proposing to their wife there, or taking the grandkids fishing on the mill pond. There's a lot of, and you can't dismiss that. But I think from the health of the river, there's not much to recommend a dam. And of course, Nancy talks about Grafton, the Milwaukee River. Downstream in the city of Milwaukee, there's a very controversial dam story going on with the Esterbrook Dam. So, in my opinion, a miserable slab of concrete that ought to go, and the people that live around it are really attached to it, and they're going to fight to hang on to it.
Yeah. Dave in Waukesha, hello. Thank you for calling.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Okay, enjoy your program. Very, very interesting. I've got two topics, and I'll briefly just touch on both of them, and then I'll stay on the line if there's any questions to go further, for me anyway.
Okay.
One of them is the Private Attorney General Act, where people do not know that individuals, an ordinary person, can take a violator into federal court, and if they are successful, they will collect attorney fees as though they were an attorney based on fair market value of the work that they've done. That's one. Two, why is someone like Waukesha, the city of Waukesha, that keeps sending our precious water down in Mississippi to Mayor Nagy down here in New Orleans, why are they not being required to recycle their water and with a water purification plant rather than going after Lake Michigan water? They're not practicing any wise conservation here. Those are my two issues, and I'll stay on the line if you have any more that you want me to ask.
Okay.
Dave, I know nothing about the private attorney general thing, so I can't comment on that. Waukesha, it's equivalent of dams. We could spend a whole show on. And you may have.
We already have.
On the Waukesha diversion. What to say about it? It seems really complicated that a city that's 15 to 18 miles away from Lake Michigan would need to devise a way to get water from Lake Michigan and then have to put it back. Seems like a lot of shuffling of water. Obviously, the city of Waukesha faces a radium from drawing down its groundwater, and they've got a unique geological thing there where it's very hard to recharge the lower aquifer because of this basically a slab of slate in the way. That's all in the works still. The DNR is reviewing Waukesha's application for a permit to take Lake Michigan water under the Great Lakes Compact, and among a lot of requirements of the compact will be that you take it out of Lake Michigan, you got to put it back. And that means Waukesha would not put its wastewater in the Fox River, the so-called Illinois Fox River, not the one that goes to Green Bay, but this one flows into Illinois, where they discharge now, but they would have to find a nearby creek that runs to Lake Michigan. And there's lots of connected issues with that probably aren't worth going into detail here, but I guess what Waukesha does, Larry, and a lot of these issues underscore, in a water-rich state, I just got back from dropping my daughter off in Baton Rouge, talking about the mayor of New Orleans, and coming through Mississippi and Illinois. I really missed water.
Yeah.
Obviously, Louisiana has a lot of water on the coast, but I'm just talking fresh water that's accessible. We are really blessed here. But it's not guaranteed. I mean, we can sing the praise of the Clean Water Act, and 40 years later, they're much better. The rivers and lakes are much better than they were, but there's still a struggle to keep them that way. In terms of the quantity business, it hasn't rained here in Dane County for almost a month.
Yeah.
We're uncertain about where climate's going to go. We've taken water for granted, I would say. And I think we have to learn to be a lot more careful. I think that's what the Waukesha deal is about. I think there's being a lot more care taken, thinking about where they're going to get their water. I think that's good.
Yeah, absolutely. And thanks, Dave, for calling. I appreciate your question and your comments. Talk a little bit about the River Alliance. What are you guys up to these days? And talk about some of your programs.
Yeah. I think the one thing the Clean Water Act struggles to regulate, and I think this is the biggest water quality issue for rivers in Wisconsin, is farm runoff. They talk about pollution sources as point sources and non-point sources, and point sources are pipes. And the non-point are the parking lots and streets of a city and then all those farm fields.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very difficult to regulate that, and not just because, not because farmers don't care or they're sloppy, but because how do you manage water running off hundreds of thousands of acres. And the biggest, I would say, the pollution problem that people encounter, Larry, you probably do on Lake Monona and mm-hmm. Lake Mendota. It's green, smelly mm-hmm. algae blooms this time of year, which is really a result of farm runoff. And so these algae blooms is a result of phosphorus, which runs off the farm fields. This is a tough one to tackle. So I think that's a big deal. We're very committed to figuring that out. It's going to be years, I think, before we kind of get a good handle on that. But because you're asking thousands of individual parties to do something different, it's really hard to do than a handful of paper plants on the Wisconsin River, for example.
Yeah, and it can be done. There's now here in Madison, for example, you can't buy fertilizer for your lawn that has phosphorus in it unless it's a new lawn you're starting up, I believe.
And you can't statewide. That's now statewide.
That's a statewide thing.
Yep.
So that doesn't impact on farmland.
It does not. So I want to say it was a good thing to do, but it's kind of token. The problem is much bigger than lawn fertilizer. So that's one thing we're working on. Another project we've taken up the last few years is urban rivers. We realized after all our dam removal work, that was well and good, and kind of looked at the map of the state of Wisconsin, and were reminded that people settled where the rivers were, for the reasons we're talking about. They were means of transport, there were places to dump waste, there were places to get water from. And, of course, that's still the case. The Fox Valley, we still refer to the Fox Valley. You can hardly see a valley, but it was developed because of the Fox River. And so to honor the good works that cities are doing, to remind of the fact that a lot of people live around, that's going to be their water. Maybe they don't drive up north. Maybe they don't have a cabin. But the river in their neighborhood could be a place they could enjoy. So there's that focus. And a lot of this we try and cover with our events. I'll just give our website quickly so people can see the events we have, wisconsinrivers.org. Find the events page. And we don't just do paddles. We do a lot of that, but we're not a paddling organization. We're really a river conservation group, and we find any means to get people to enjoy and understand rivers better. So it's everything from polywogging for mussels in the Chippewa to the trip on the Fox that I mentioned coming up in July.
Yeah, lots of great stuff. And you can go to my Facebook page as well at the Larry Mueller Show, and there's a link to the River Alliance right there on the page as well. Cindy in La Crosse, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi. I just wanted to say that I continue to marvel at how our streams and rivers can change once we do take the sewage out of the lake or out of the streams, once we put some habitat in, once we take a dam out or two dams and put parks along the side, once we take the cows out of a 100-yard stretch and confine them to 20 yards instead. The streams and the rivers react to that. They do change, and without that Clean Water Act, we wouldn't have the ability to go in and make that change.
Couldn't have said it better myself, Cindy. You're absolutely right. And rivers do recover quickly. And some of the things you described are not all that expensive. I mean, these are not multi-million dollar projects restore 100 yards of stream, for example.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Thank you so much, Cindy.
Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate your call very much. Well, here we are, about out of time. Anything, any last minute, final piece of advice to our listeners?
Yes, Larry. We're all citizens. Hopefully we're also all voters. And you don't have to vote. The ability to use this federal law to the advantage of the waters of Wisconsin are many. Organizations like ours exist to give people that opportunity. There are close to 100 local river and watershed groups. That's just rivers and watersheds. Then there are, of course, scores of lake associations and so forth. It's really easy for citizens to scratch their democratic itch and save their waters.
Yeah. And again, the Wisconsin River Alliance, a good place to go, a good organization to take a look at. And go to their website, take a look at what they're doing. And Denny, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me, Larry.
Yeah, I appreciate it very much. Denny Knaff, executive director of the River Alliance of Wisconsin. And he'll be back again. We'll talk with him some more about our rivers and probably the Clean Water Act as well. We have lots of good things coming up. Tomorrow, Dr. Matt Jensen will tell us how we can prevent strokes and what are the warning signs that someone is having a stroke. Had a friend's mom have a stroke just this last week, a very scary thing, always is. So I'm really looking forward to hearing what Dr. Jensen has to say. 11:45, Roger Reynolds shares ways to preserve the bounty of our gardens so that we can eat delicious, healthy food all year. And then that's great, too, and it keeps me reminds me of my trip. We'll be leaving on July 1st for London for a tour of many gardens with our Wisconsin Public Radio listeners. Looking forward to that. You stay with us. Lots in store here on the Ideas Network.